How many of you know of Colorado's Miss Peggy? Colorado Buffaloes, the college football team there, serenaded her on her 100th birthday last November because she is thought to be the team's most loyal fan. Miss Betty has been going to the Colorado football games, Colorado Buffaloes football games for decades, going all the way back to the 1940s when she first started going, and in 1966 her and her husband bought season tickets and went to every single game since then except for three. And so she has been watching these games and going to these games forever. And such loyalty and devotion is actually quite common in college football. I would imagine there may be some Cardinals or Kentucky Wildcat fans in here that might be so enamored with their team that they would go to every home game or have been to multiple home games. But this is such a level of loyalty that deserves recognition and appreciation. And so they made it very clear this season how much they appreciated her and the loyalty she's shown to the team. In a sense, loyalty is the common person's superpower. You know, to be the hero has been a common fantasy of children and people forever. We see it in the worship of the gods with their superpowers going back for centuries, for millennia. We see it in the ancient stories of heroes like Beowulf and Homer and all those other heroes that we read about in our history. And with the rise of the modern comic book superheroes in the 1940s, it took on a scientific touch with lab-created heroes like Captain America and the Hulk or Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. And with this century, with this the recent the explosion of Marvel Comics movies beginning with Iron Man and Robert Downey starring as Iron Man back in 2009, movie series made it cool for adults to talk about what their superpower might be. You know, sit around the water cooler at work and, you know, my superpower, if I had a superpower. But these compensations happen now because of the popularity of the movie series. When we talk about loyalty, what we're talking about is the unswerving allegiance or commitment to another person, group, nation, or ideal, regardless of personal cost. So we don't care how much it costs, we're going to be loyal to this person or group or this idea. And that's what Miss Peggy is known for. And the loyal person is one who remains loyal and faithful to another regardless of their own personal cost. And as a result, it is the source of power for the recipient of that loyalty, as well as the giver of that loyalty. Now, it also can bring risk to one's wealth or reputation if it's given to the wrong person, or sometimes even freedom if the recipient is going to be attacked by others, or if we give loyalty to somebody or some person or some ideal that we should not give loyalty to. So, loyalty is to be given with careful consideration. Tonight, as we continue our review of the life of David, we're going to look at an examination of the power of loyalty in 2 Samuel chapters 14 through 20. We're going to be covering quite a bit of material here. We're going to read some passages, quite a few passages, without a lot of comment about them, and then just have some commentary, some concluding thoughts with some takeaways at the end. Remember, last week we saw David's family was dysfunctional. Because he was paralyzed morally. Because of his sin with Bathsheba, he was stuck without feeling incapable of dealing with the sin in his own children. And then as a result of that, he became a distant dad, standoffish from his own children, his own sons and daughters and kids. And then when he finally did act, it was just too little, too late to solve his family problems. And since we were focused on his family problems in that text, it was 13 through 19, chapters 13 through 19, we skipped over a whole lot of other events that occurred during Absalom's rebellion, events that deserve study because of the lessons they can teach us particularly about loyalty and disloyalty, as well as inappropriate loyalty. And so we're going to look at some of that tonight. We're going to work through some of these. And we're just going to basically begin with a list of some, look at a list of folks that are loyal, then a list of folks that were disloyal or unloyal, and we'll have some takeaways at the end. So let's start with the positive side and talk about David's loyal supporters. And we're going to start with somebody that might surprise you. One of David's most loyal supporters throughout his life was Joab. Joab. Now you think, well, why would I say Joab? Well, let's look at the text and we see. In fact, Joab actually ends up to be one of the most loyal, but sometimes also it showed some bad loyalty that was not really so much about supporting David, but about himself. So what we're going to talk about first is just the good side of Joab. And this goes back to chapter 13. If you look at 2 Samuel chapter 14, 2 Samuel 14, Absalom had killed his brother Amnon. He's off away in his grandfather's home in Geshur. And so Joab, notice what it says about Joab here in 2 Samuel 14, verse 1. Joab is loyal to the king. He's paying attention to the king, and he knows what's going on in the king's mind and how he's feeling. And so he wants to address his feelings and help him do better. Verse 1 says, now Joab, the son of Zeruiah. Zeruiah, by the way, is David's sister, so that makes Joab his nephew, perceived that the king's heart was inclined toward Absalom. So Joab was perceptive. He was paying attention. He was understanding what his king was feeling and going through. And as a result of that, he decided to try to help him and try to regain or to restore his relationship with his son Absalom. And so in verses 2 and 3, he works to bring him back. Verse 2, so Joab sent to Tekoa and brought a wise woman from there and said to her, please pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments now, and do not anoint yourself with oil, but be like a woman who has been mourning for the dead many days. Then go to the king and speak to him in this manner. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And we won't take the time to read it, just a brief summary. He tells her to go to David and say, I have two sons, I have two boys, one of them killed the other one and has fled, and now there's a death sentence on him, and I want my son back, but if he comes back, he'll be killed, and then I'll be a widow, childless, I'll be have no children, no support. And so David sympathizes with her, but then David kind of thinks about it, and he says, wait a minute. Then in verse 19, he says to her, so the king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? And she said, yes. And so he explained that. And so he calls in Joab, and Joab says to him, says, you need to bring your son back. And so he brings Absalom back. And so Absalom is brought back. David relented and had him recalled. Now, however, as we noted last week, David refused to reunite with Absalom for two more years. So he was gone for three. Now he comes back into Jerusalem. He's there for 2 years. And David won't have anything to do with him until Joab intervenes again at the end of chapter 14 and in verse 33. Look in verse 33. So when Joab came to the king and told him, he called for Absalom. Then he came to the king and prostrated himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. One of the things that we might do is look at that and say, well, wait a minute. So Joab's the one that caused all this. It's Joab's fault that Absalom revolted against his father David. If he had to intervene, Absalom would have been never would have come home, and this would have never happened. And that's possible, but we don't know that. Joab is trying to get a father and son reunited. And because he knows David needs to be reunited with his son. David just messes it up completely. It's David's fault. It's not Joab's fault that David couldn't get it right with his son. And so we shouldn't fault Joab for that. David failed to man up and repair his relationship with Absalom, and that's why there were problems. What we see in this text is that Joab is being loyal to David. Later on, when battle was required, Joab and Abishai, that's Joab's brother Abishai, is also so David's niece and nephew as well, led David's army against the rebel alliance. Look in chapter 18, 2 Samuel 18, verses 1 and 2. Then David numbered the people who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds. David sent the people out, one third under the command of Joab, one third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, I myself will surely go out with you also. And the people said, no, you're old. You die and we're dead. It's all over. So no, you stay here and they'll go out and fight. So Joab and his brother Abishai are going out serving David as the leader of his army. And if you recall, the last thing that David said to them as they left to go out to battle was, be careful with the little boy. Be careful with my son Absalom. David, you've already blown it. You've already messed up. It's too late. If the boy is not dealt with properly, David would be the one ending up dying. And so as a result, when Absalom got trapped in the tree with his hair, everybody knows the story about that. You know, that's a risk I take every time I walk through the woods, getting trapped by my hair in a tree. Okay. All right, we got some left. Okay. So he's trapped. And everybody's saying, you heard what David said. We can't lay a hand on him. Joab says, fooey on that nonsense. And in verse 14, says this, then Joab said, I will not waste time here with you. So he took three spears in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. Believe it or not, he was looking out for David because David was not going to deal with this properly. It was harsh, it was cruel, and it was awful. But David just kept messing up. It would have been another source of another problem that would never be resolved. And so, misguided, cruel, whatever we want to call it, he was looking out for David and the nation in this. And then in chapter 19, when David finds out that his son is dead and he's screaming and crying about his son, weeping over the death of his son and saying, if it had been better if I had just died, who had to go in and say, David, snap out of it, man. Grow up. You're shaming the people who went and fought and risked their lives and the ones who died in the battle for you. You're shaming them. Chapter 19, verse 1. Then it was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom. The victory that day was turned to mourning for all the people, for the people heard it, said that day, the king is grieved for his son. So the people went by stealth into the city that day as people who are humiliated steal away when they flee in battle. So it was like they had lost instead of won because of David's immature, out of control response. Verse 4, the king covered his face and cried out with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. I can understand. I'm not saying that David shouldn't mourn, but he's messing up. And Joab goes in and straightens him out. Then Joab came into the house of the king and said, today you have covered with shame the faces of all your servants who today have saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters. And the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, and by loving those who hate you and by hating those who love you. For you have shown today that princes and servants are nothing to you. For I know this day that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, surely not a man will pass the night with you, and this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. David needed to hear that. And only a man who's loyal to David would have had the courage to go in and say it. So, Joab is an example of loyalty to his King David. There are some others that we need to look at. There's his servants back in chapter 15 and who went out with him. Look back in 2 Samuel 15 and verses 15 through 18. All the servants, instead of staying there, said, well, we're just servants. We'll stay here. We'll serve the new king. We don't care who comes. No, they pack up and they leave with David. Verse 15, then the king's servants said to the king, Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king chooses. Their loyalty was to the king, the chosen one of God. So the king went out and all his household with him, but the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. The king went out and all the people with him, and they stopped at the last house going out of Jerusalem. This is going to be an awful procession. Now all his servants passed on beside him. And then to list all of them, all of these servants went with him. They didn't stay and say, well, you know, new regime, we're going to stay here. We don't care. As long as our work and our place is protected, they're going to go with David. They're going to risk their lives to support their king. Then there was another guy named Ittai the Gittite. We saw him earlier, later, a few minutes ago, where he was leading one third of the army. And notice in verse 19, this is in verse 19 where David talks to him. Then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, why will you also go with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile. Return to your own place. You came only yesterday, and shall I today make you wander with us while I go where I will? Return and take back your brothers. Mercy and truth be with you. So he said, you don't have to follow me. You don't need to do this. But Ittai answered the king and said, as the Lord lives, as my lord the king lives, surely wherever my lord the king may be, wherever for death or for life, there also your servant will be. That's loyalty regardless of the cost. He's going to serve David, help protect David, no matter what. No matter what it might cost him, no matter what it might bring upon him. So you have that loyal servant and loyal friend. Then you have another guy, another priest, Zadok and Abiathar. And that's in verses 24 through 29. They come out bringing the ark. They're like, all right, David's leaving. We're taking the ark. We're going with David. We're not going to be stuck here. This man's a usurper. We're not going to serve this king. And David sends them back, and they agree to go back. And he says, you go back and you watch out and you serve basically as spies. And so they go back to serve David as well. Their loyalty is to David. So they're going to serve David by staying back in Jerusalem. And we're going to see how they become very important later on. In fact, in chapter 17, when Absalom comes in, they find out what Absalom's plans are, and they send their sons. Zadok has a son, and Abiathar has a son, and they're sent to sneak out of the city, and they have to hide in a well because they're being chased. Go out and tell David what's going on so David can know how to set up and prepare for response to Solomon. And that's in chapter 17, verses 15 through 20. And they had to hide. They had to hide in a well, and the woman took a covering, verse 19, spread it over the well's mouth and scattered grain on it so that nothing was known. So they had to hide there. They would have been killed. And probably Zadok and Abiathar would have been killed. So again, loyalty above personal cost. Serving the king, doing the right thing above whatever price they might have to pay. And then there's another guy named Hushai the Archite. Hushai the Archite, I don't know much about him other than this, but there's a lot about him here. Apparently he's an older man and he's a counselor to David. And so he's going to come out and go with David. Look in chapter 15 and verse 32. He's going to come out. David said to him, it happened as David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped, that behold, Hushai the Archite met him with his coat torn and dust on his head. This guy's identifying with David. He's showing his loyalty to David. And David says, look, if you pass over with me, then you'll be a burden to me. So apparently the guy's an old guy, and so he's not going to be a fighter. He's not going to be agile. He's better serve David and pretending to serve Absalom so he can give him false information and false ideas. In fact, once Absalom arrived and began getting advice from his counselors, he counseled with Hushai, because Hushai said, well, look, I'm going to serve whoever's king. You're the king now, I'm going to serve you. And so he accepted that and took his advice, gave him advice to, you know, don't be so hasty to go chasing after David, because he knew that David needed some time to get across the Jordan and get his army together and get ready to fight against Absalom, who had been planning a rebellion for years. And so David had to go over and prepare. And so Hushai talked him into it. You want to give somebody credit for saving David? Give it to that guy right there, Hushai the Archite. He was crucial. He was essential. All the others were very important as well, but this guy changed the direction and the timing of the battle and put it in David's favor. And then there were some others. These were just some guys named Shobi, Machir, Machir, and Barzillai in chapter 17. And I want you to notice what they do. This is loyalty. Just little stuff, but important stuff. 27, verse 27 of chapter 17. Now when David had come to Mahanaim, Shobi the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the sons of Ammon, so he's not even an Israelite, Machir the son of Ammiel from Lodabar, and Barzillai the Gileadite from Rogelim, brought beds, basins, pottery, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seeds, honey, curd, sheep, and cheese of the herd for David and for the people who were with him to eat, for they said the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. They didn't have a Walmart down at the corner when they got across the river. And so this guy brings them, these folks bring them food. The power of loyalty preserved David's kingdom. All of these people together, none of them by themselves a superhero. None of them by themselves super powerful. None of them by themselves this magnificent leader like David. But each one of them individually with what little they could do, they did for David. They showed their loyalty and they saved him. They served him. That's the power of loyalty. In fact, I almost called this lesson the superpower of loyalty. Because it is a superpower. It's a power that we have, every single one of us can have in our service to God and to one another. And we don't have to be super. We can be a 100-year-old little old lady and have that superpower if we would think about it. They were loyal to the rightful king. Well, let's look quickly at the disloyal folk, the one who turned against David. And the first of these is a guy named Ahithophel. We won't read these passages because it's just going to take too much time. But Ahithophel is a counselor who in chapter 15 and verse 12, before the rebellion, went down and met with Absalom down in Hebron. And he was a man who had been a supporter and advisor of David, went down there and joined up with Absalom to prepare for and lead in the rebellion. And then when they got into Jerusalem, Ahithophel is the one who said, "Here, you want to humiliate your father? Go up on the top of the roof of the palace and take his concubines. Make sure everybody knows what you're doing up there. Humiliate and show disrespect for his father." And he's the one who said, "Attack now. Catch David before he has time to get ready." And Hushai said, "Give him time. Wait a little bit. Everybody will get tired, they'll get weak, and they won't get any better. And you get your forces consolidated, then you go talk. And you go attack." Does anybody remember what Ahithophel did as soon as it became clear that Absalom was going to listen to Hushai? Raise your hands if you remember. I see. All right. One. Two. Okay. He went home and hanged himself because he knew it was over. He knew the battle was going to be lost because of Hushai's advice. But he was disloyal to David. He had been a servant of David. He was disloyal to David. And he backed and gave loyalty to the wrong person. And we don't have time to talk about Ziba, the false servant, or Shimei, the insulter. Shimei, the insulter, is a fun story to read because he reminds me of Pete Rose. Everybody wants to put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. But all I can think about Pete Rose is kicking dirt on the baseball plate and the umpires and insulting them. It makes me think of Hushai. And then Joab, the self-server, because at the end, Joab kills another man, murders another leader that David had chosen, because he wanted to preserve his position as leader of the army of Israel. So you got the superpower of loyalty, the failed power of disloyalty, and loyalty for the wrong people. Well, let's wrap up with some quick takeaways. Let's just come wrap this up with some takeaways here. When I say that loyalty is a superpower, We also, that also means it brings great responsibility. Everybody knows the line from Spider-Man, with great power becomes great responsibility. And so what that means is we need to handle it very, very carefully. We need to give it out very carefully. We don't want to become loyal to someone who does not deserve loyalty, or someone who is a bad person to be loyal to, or a bad group to be loyal to, or a bad idea or ideal to be loyal to. Don't be loyal to, beating dogs. That's not an ideal that you want to be known for. Cruelty is not the kind of ideal, and a cruel person is not the kind of person we want to be loyal to. So be very careful about where we give loyalty. Second thing, loyalty has layers. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 37 through 39, Jesus says that if you love your father or mother more than me, you're not worth of me. You have to be willing to take up your cross daily to die for me. And the person who will lose his life for me, serve him regardless of the cost, will gain his life. And the person who will not give up his life for the Lord will lose his life. And so loyalty begins with God. We have to put God first. And then in the Colossians 3, verses 18 through 21, it talks about the husband and the wife and the father and the parents and the children and that loving relationship there. But God comes first, and we love our children and we love our families and our spouses because we love God. So it starts with loving God, and then from that builds out the loving of our family. And then as a third thing, as he talks about there in the text, servants and masters, that relationship then expands from there. Loyalty begins there, and we have to put God first. Now, when we put God first, that means that we will understand the relationship we're supposed to have with our family and the relationship we're supposed to have with others. And we'll treat others the right way. Because that's the last one, is that loyalty does not support sin. Putting God first means that I can't say, well, you know what? I'm going to sin because it'll help this person. No, God says no. Putting God first negates that, rules that out. You can't sin in order to serve other people. Christ came and gave himself for other people, but he didn't sin. He did it sinlessly. And he's calling on us to do that as well. Nathan confronted David for his sin. That was loyalty. Joab, as we said earlier, confronted David for his sin. That was loyalty. Paul confronted Peter for his sin. That was loyalty. Loyalty to God and family and our friends does not allow us to mistreat strangers and other people. Loyalty does not support sin. Well, those are the three takeaways. And so we end with the question, you saw this earlier, are you a superhero of faith? And when I was putting this together, I was thinking about replacing her picture with some of the Marvel and DC comic book superheroes. But I decided not to. You want to know why I decided not to? Superheroes look like that. Superheroes of faith look like that. Little old ladies who go to church all the time, and old men who go to church all the time, and people who spend their lives serving God and showing their families and their brethren how to be faithful Christians. They are superheroes that need to be recognized and honored and respected and emulated. Not worshiped. We only worship the Lord, but emulated. We want to follow that example. And so we end with the question, are you a superhero of faith? If that's what you look like now, are you a superhero of faith? If you live old enough to look like that, you can be a superhero of faith. That's the kind of people God wants, is people who will be loyal to Him no matter the cost. We can help you be right with God tonight, to become a loyal follower of Christ. We beg you, we